I'm John Kroll. On today's No Limits, we're going to talk with former Indianapolis Mayor Bill Hutton and his wife, Beverly. Mayor Bill, as he was known during his 16 years as the mayor of Indiana's largest city, has been diagnosed with throat cancer and congestive heart failure, and now fights for his life. We're going to talk with the Hutnuts about their lives now and about how they feel about their lives in Indiana. Please join this historic conversation. You can call us at 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI, and Twitter is WFYI. We look forward to talking with you. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We've got a special show today. We are talking with former Indianapolis Mayor Bill Hutnut and his wife Beverly. We are doing this from NPR's fabulous studios in Washington, D.C. I'd like to thank our hosts for making this possible for us. And I would like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Bill, Bev, welcome to the program.
It's nice to be here.
It's good to have both of you here. I'm going to ask the question out of the gate here that I think everybody in Indianapolis wants to know, and that is, how are you doing, Mayor Bill?
Well, I think that I'm doing as well as can be expected. We've finished the radiation on the throat cancer, and we're waiting for results. And on the heart situation, it's irreversible. But the advanced heart failure that I have is sort of reached a plateau, and I'm on that plateau and able to do a lot of things that I enjoy and go out of the house if somebody drives me, because I'm housebound without that, can't drive. And you just have to go on day by day, and our mantra is keep calm and carry on.
And I'm going to ask the same question of you, Bev. How are you doing? Because it's obviously something like this in a marriage is not an isolated incident. The spouse has to deal with an awful lot, too.
Well, it's certainly been a challenging past few months for us. Overall, I'm hanging in there. There are certainly days where I feel like I'm hanging by my fingernails. But, you know, we have both pretty much been able to remain cheerful and upbeat, and you know, we're doing what we have to do to get through every day and get to doctor's appointments and get all the meds in the system and all of that.
I might say that Bev's modest, and she's been a wonderful caregiver and sort of an angel of mercy these last several months.
Well, thank you.
What has been the most difficult thing to deal with since this process started? You were diagnosed with throat cancer at the end of December?
Yeah.
And congestive heart failure had been a persistent problem.
For 14 years.
For 14 years that you've been battling that. But I'll go back to the original question. What has been the most difficult thing to cope with?
Well, it was not easy going downtown for 25 radiation treatments day after day. We'd leave the house about 8 o'clock, and at that time of the year, it was February and March, it was pretty snowy outside and cold, and it was tough. But I had Bev, and I had a couple of cousins who helped me a lot and drove me each day. So I finished the 25 radiation treatments in good style, and had a couple of operations along the way while I was getting them, because I had a compressed fracture.
What is it called? Fracture in the back.
Compression fracture in the back on one of the vertebrae, and then they put in a stomach tube to feed me if in case my throat swelled up, which, thank heavens, it didn't do. So I'm doing fine, and I've just got to say at the beginning, I sure appreciate all the wishes, good wishes, and warm thoughts that have been sent to me from Indianapolis, many of which are on the Caring Bridge website, where we've had over 900 visits.
Yeah, just under 1,000, I think, the last time I checked. Those well-wishers, the folks, and I should say, when we've posted this on, you know, our Facebook page is in all of that, inevitably the theme is the same. People are very concerned about you. You know, want to make sure that you are doing well.
I appreciate that.
And they want to communicate just how much you meant to the city. If I got that message once, I got it at least 65, 70 times from people saying they wanted to say thank you. That's got to feel pretty good.
Well, it does. I'm very, very grateful. I've even had some people from Indianapolis outside of my family come over and visit, like Deputy Mayor John Krause. And I had a call from Mitch Daniels and a couple of calls from Dick Lugar. And it's just been very much appreciated. Dan Coates called me. And then I read the Caring Bridge website, and I just am overwhelmed with gratitude because, as was said once, the religion of gratitude can never mislead us. And I'm grateful.
You mentioned Mitch Daniels, something before I started doing the research on this program. I did for this program. I didn't realize how long your association with our former governor.
Mitch and I go back to 1972 when I was running for Congress, and he was my first campaign manager, and he was officed in the campaign communicator headquarters. And he sort of called the shots for my first campaign for Congress. And we've been friends ever since.
And he how did you pick him as your
first? I didn't pick him. He was picked for me.
Oh.
By the county boss, Keith Bulin.
Okay. Because he had to be very young.
He was right out of Princeton.
Okay. And you were a Princeton guy, too. So
yeah.
It was a natural association.
But Mitch was so smart, he probably got out when he was 16. I don't know.
Well, in keeping with that, we actually have a few words from your very first campaign manager who recorded a spot for us. We're going to listen Mitch Daniels now. He recorded something
wonderful.
Special for you.
He ensured Indianapolis would not be a one-act play. You know, a lot of us, I was a young person in Mayor Dick Lugar's administration, which is where the town really began to attack its problems and to do big and noteworthy things. And a lot of us were worried that whoever came next would let us stall out and lapse back into the mediocrity that led to those Indian Oplace jokes at the time. And instead, you get Hudnut. By the time he left office, there was no question that Indianapolis was a happening city, and that was hardly a given on the day he was first elected in 1975.
That was former governor, Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels, who also, among his many other distinctions, is he was also Bill Hudnut's first campaign manager.
Well, I appreciate that. And it was nice of Mitch to record that. I appreciate it.
We have, if you are just joining us, we are talking with former Indianapolis Mayor Bill Hudnut and his wife, Beverly. If you would like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can reach out to us on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Rev has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Rev, you're on the line.
Thank you. I'm sort of a Mayor Hudnut groupie. And I've heard him make some comments that he could elaborate on. Firstly, when he was atop of the snowplow declaring war on the blizzard, his opponent apparently said to him afterwards that he couldn't run against him because he was now stronger than, was it 10?
An acre.
100 acres of dead onions.
Yeah, something like that.
And the other thing was on... I think you said once that towards the end of your reign that a child had talked about raising taxes, and you said, "Wow, if a child knows about it, maybe it's time to move on." But could you speak about, you know, the city and the state raising money by taxes or by selling off toll roads and parking outfits and also water companies? And I'll take the call off the air. Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much for the call.
Thanks for the call, and you bring back some memories of the blizzard. And just recently, the Indiana State Museum asked me if I would give them my cap that I wore, the red, white, and blue racer cap, and I did. And the other thing was marching in a parade in Terre Haute, and my opponent had blasted the airwaves with had not raised taxes 27 times while he was mayor of Indianapolis. And this young child tugged his mother by the arm and said, so my wife could hear it, Beverly heard it, "Hey, look, Mom, there goes the guy that raised taxes 27 times in Indianapolis." And I knew my goose was cooked, even though it was a little bit of a stretch. On the other issues that you raised, I know that Governor Daniels and Mayor Goldsmith both had a very forthright approach to doing what had to be done by way of privatization of some of the assets and resources and services that the city provided. And that was what they were doing. And I was just on the sidelines then, so I can't really comment much more than that to say congratulations.
I was there. I mean, when you were mayor, obviously, you know, you emphasized public-private partnerships too.
Yes.
But there seemed to be a difference in the focus, at least the way you went about that. Could you talk a little bit about that?
There is a difference. I think you can privatize too much, and we had a legal department, and we had people that picked up the trash, and some of it was privatized, but about 4/7 of it was not privatized. And there's a difference between what you might call privatization, where you give it over to the private sector entirely for providing a service, and what we tried to do, which was to keep a leash on it and monitor the privatization so that it didn't go too far, because the downside of privatization is, one, that you lose accountability. These people who are given the contracts aren't accountable to the city, and they can mess up a project, or they can charge high rents that you don't know about and so forth. So we felt that it was important to monitor all these services that were privatized, and a lot more was done after I left office than while I was there.
How would being mayor be different for you now if you had to do the job?
It'd be really tough, John, because now the city and the state are both polarized between Republicans and Democrats. And right now, I think the Republican mayor of Indianapolis has a Democrat city council to work with, and I never had that. And I also was blessed with good people on both sides of the aisle, led by Bert Servais, who was on the city council as the president. And he was able to pull everybody together, and he and I worked very hard at that. And, for example, every other Monday morning, I would have breakfast before a council meeting with the majority leader, and we'd go over the agenda and talk about things. And it all worked out, and I was blessed with majorities of anywhere from, there are 29 people on the council, maybe up to 22 or 3, and it worked out very well for me. And it's not been quite that good since at the county and city level.
How did we get to that point? I mean, the fact that there is an awful lot of acrimony. You know, it started sort of at the federal level, but it has bled down to the state and to some degree the city level. What do you think accounts for that?
I got no idea. There's been a loss of civility, a loss of collaborative feeling, and those C words are very important, collegiality and all that, cooperation, and even compromise. And now there seems to be an ideological rigidity that prevents people from collaborating and compromising, and compromise is like, you know, like in a marriage, you have to compromise. And so you do in politics to get things done. I never believed in my way or the highway. I always believed, let's work it out. Come, let us reason around this table together. Keep on talking and figuring out how you can be creative, even if you have to have a plan B, in order to accomplish your objective.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with former Indianapolis Mayor Bill Hudnut. He was mayor of the city from 1976 to 1972 during the period 1992, excuse me, during the period of its greatest growth. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking with former Indianapolis Mayor Bill Hudnut and his wife Beverly. We're talking from NPR's lovely studios in Washington, D.C. We are grateful to our hosts for making this available to us. If you would like to join this conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Antonio did and give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Well, actually, why don't we? We'll take a call from Mary instead, a listener named Mary. 866. Mary, are you with us? Mary, are you with us?
Merrily, we roll along.
Mary, okay. Well, we will try to get Mary back soon. We were talking beforehand about how the political climate has changed. And I know you don't want to get into policy questions, but you have to. It's sort of the elephant in the room in Indiana right now.
Yes.
The whole Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Well, that was very
debacle. Yeah.
I think that was unfortunate. There were unintended consequences of it, which ultimately I think tarnished the image of Indiana and certainly of the city of Indianapolis, and perhaps hurt the long-range convention business there. But I hope we can bounce back from that because it's a great state and it's resilient. There are a lot of good people there. And I want to see it all work out. But you're right. There has been a decline in the kind of partnership feelings between Democrats and Republicans that really operated back in the 70s when I was in Congress and then when I was in the mayor's office.
You took a pretty strong stand when it came to RFRA, right?
I was fortunate. It was Beverly's idea, really, but we put together a letter from the five mayors, and Dick Lugar and Steve Goldsmith and Bart Peterson and Greg Ballard were very cooperative, and we tweaked it back and forth, and then we sent it out saying that we were concerned about the fallout and about the damage it was doing to economic development in Indianapolis. And Indianapolis, like all of Indiana, is not a place where you're going to get automatic growth like you do in Florida or Texas. Kathy Whitmire, the former mayor of Houston, once said to me, Bill, the difference between you and me is that down here I have to control growth. Up there you have to create it. And so you've got to really do everything you can to make your city attractive to outside investments.
Beverly, where did you come up with the idea of having the five former mayors or four former and one current mayor do
well,
the letter?
Well, we had just gone public with Bill's illness, just really the day before the RFRA stuff really broke out in Indiana. And my husband was very eager to speak his mind on that. And we were trying to weigh carefully because we had just shared some pretty tough news from our family and put ourselves out there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this all came up and he felt very strongly about doing something. And we started talking back and forth. And you know, we were concerned about getting out there on something else so quickly when we'd been quiet for a long time and all of that. But we just started talking back and forth, and then it just popped into my head. It's like, well, what if all five mayors signed something?
Well, the background of it was down at UIndy when the five mayors got together for a dialogue. Mm-hmm. And Matt Tully was the moderator, and at the end I forced the other four to stand up, and we all held hands in a victory salute, and it was sort of an iconic picture. And that was the background for trying to get the five mayors to do something more substantive, if you will, and apposite to the times and relevant.
Well, and actually we have one of those mayors who wanted to comment on your efforts to pull people together. It is a recording from your predecessor as Indianapolis mayor.
Dick Lugar.
Yes, former U.S. Senator Dick Lugar. We're going to listen to Senator Lugar now.
On the day after Governor Pence signed the Religious Freedom Act, Bill called me and said, we need to write a letter of the five mayors, which included the last five, to the Indianapolis Star for immediate publication. He said, I have an original draft I'd like to send over to you by email, which he did. I thought it was a tremendous idea. He proceeded on with Steve Goldsmith, Bart Peterson, who made useful corrections and additions, and then to the mayor. And the Star published that very letter the same day that it all commenced. That Bill Hudnut, in the midst of his illness and infirmity, could take that initiative and bring about those results was truly remarkable.
That was former U.S. Senator Richard Lugar.
Remarkable. Thank you, Dick.
And who was also Bill Hudnut's predecessor as mayor. So I just have to ask, out of curiosity's sake, when the five of you get together, is there some sort of secret handshake? Or
what do
the rest of you?
For the most part, it's hugs.
It's hugs, okay.
Yeah.
What are the things, though, that you share that the rest of us can't get?
What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is you've all had a similar experience. You've all had the responsibility. The five of you. That you know, the rest of the world just wouldn't understand.
Well, I used to say to high school students when I was going around in Indianapolis as mayor, don't get in politics if you can't stand the two things. One's very large and one's very small. The very small one was the stipend or compensation. The very large one was the pressure. We were under a lot of scrutiny and pressure, whether it was the blizzard of 78 or a fiscal crisis or a tax increase or something like that. And you just had to work it through. That was my feeling. And I think all of us shared the same idea, namely that we have a goal and we want to achieve it. I mean, Dick Lugar was crafting Unigov way back when in the late 60s. And without that, would not have had the platform that we had for the emergence of the modern Indianapolis. And then we all were, as it were, beneficiaries of Dick's legacy and stood on his shoulders, so to speak, with the foundations he'd laid. Then it came to me, then Goldsmith, then Peterson, and now Mayor Greg Ballard, who has been a terrific friend and took the initiative to start the Hudnut Commons project downtown near the convention center.
And you mentioned the stress was a big part of the job. We've got a caller right now named Ann who's talking about stress in a different sense. Ann, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the program. Your question, Ann.
You want to know my question?
Yes, please.
As I was going to ask him as a working, or ask Beverly as a working wife and mother, how does she handle the day-to-day stress? And then say, I understand you try to go to the gym often.
Oh, I know which Ann this is. Thank you so much for calling. One of the most important
things. So tell us how you do handle it, Beverly.
I will. I started going to the fitness center every day last August after one of my younger sisters died. And at the time, she had brain cancer. And at the time, it was my own personal tribute to my sister, Missy, whose birthday is actually today. And I started going to the fitness center. I thought that's the one thing I could do to keep myself in good health while I knew we would continue to navigate some difficult health issues with Bill. So I do that. I have recently added going to a once-a-week bar fitness class. It's B-A-R-R-E, not the B-A-R. And good stretching and breathing exercises.
That's like a ballet type thing, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been doing. Thank you for asking.
Well, good for you for taking care of yourself. That's very, very important now.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call.
Thanks, Ann.
Okay.
We would like to go now to a caller named Pamela.
Hi, Pamela.
Pamela, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello, Pamela. Welcome to the program.
You're on the air.
You are.
Hi, this
with
is
the mayor.
Tamara. And Mayor Hudnut,
Tamara.
I just wanted to say thank you for your leadership and your vision. You set the stage for the 20 years that I was able to devote to downtown and making it strong. So we couldn't have done what we so many did without your setting the stage.
Well, thank you, Tamara. You did a great job over at the visit. What was it? Not Visit Indy, but what?
Indianapolis Downtown Inc.
That's it. That's it. Very good.
And
you were certainly
burning,
an addition.
I just returned from a ULI panel in Norman, Oklahoma, and Glenda Hood, Mayor Glenda Hood, and Dick Gailhouse, we were all singing your praises.
Oh, well, they're good friends, and we've done a lot of work together over the years. Glenda was the mayor of Orlando for 12 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But, John, Tamara makes indirectly a point that I want to make, and that is that a lot of people helped, and Bill Hudnut does not deserve all the credit. It was a team effort. I had a great staff around me, a great spirit of public-private partnership, leadership from the private sector, and people like Tamara, who ran some of these very wonderful nonprofits in the city. And it all added up, but it wasn't just me. It was us, we.
Tamara, thank you very much for the call. We also have another caller queued up, someone I think you know, former U.S. Senator Evan Bayh.
Oh,
calling in.
My goodness. Hi, Evan.
Senator Bayh.
Bill, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I am well. It is truly good to hear your voice.
Well, you're nice to call in, and I want to ask you the obvious question. I'll pass that.
Well, I have a pretty good way of not answering those obvious questions anyway. But it's great to be with you, Bill. I have so many fond memories, and I know my father would want to share with the audience his very, very high regard and friendship for you as well.
Oh, thank you. How's he doing?
He's doing well. He's 87 years young and going strong. He slowed down a little physically, but mentally he's all still there.
Yeah.
So he's good. Thank you for asking.
Well, you came from a wonderful father and mother. And you did a very, very nice job. I've always admired you. You're just smooth as silk, and you're sharp and incisive, and you know what's going on. You're a great guy.
Well,
Senator Bayh,
that's kind of you to say. It's kind of you to put your reputation at risk by saying so, Bill, but I appreciate it.
Well, I think we've got to be a little bipartisan. I mean, you know how Annie Jacobs and I were. We were dear
Absolutely.
Friends. And I consider you a very good friend, except when we're campaigning against each other.
which was not that often, and I'm sure.
Which was never, really.
Callers, I'm sure the other callers, John, have shared with your audience that Bill Hudnut was old school in the way that, you know, he put the city of Indianapolis and the people of Indiana first, and not politics or partisanship or that kind of thing. You know, we all belong to political parties, but that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is, what do you do to help other people? And that's the kind of public servant Bill Hudnut always was. And so his friendship with Andy Jacobs and my father and me and many, many others on both sides of the aisle is testament to that.
Thank you, Evan. I think it's important to have that kind of collegial feeling. And if I'm not mistaken, when you wrote a piece about leaving the Senate, that was one of your concerns.
Well, it's Congress, unfortunately, Bill has become almost tribal. And, You know, they view each other as with a great deal of suspicion. And I'll tell you what the bottom line of it all is. You know, historically in our country, compromise, principled compromise, was viewed as an act of statesmanship. The
yes.
Constitution itself was one big compromise. And yet for too many people today, that notion of compromise, of trying to find common ground, is instead viewed as an act of betrayal. And
yep.
I think we need to get away from that, because some progress is better than none.
I agree with you 100%.
Senator Bayh, if I could ask you real quickly, what is your most significant memory of working with Mayor Hudnut?
Oh, there's so many, Bill. I mean, first of all, I'm jealous, Bill. I never thought of, during a blizzard, of going out and jumping on a piece of state road clearing equipment to help plow the snow.
It was
on the ski cap and getting on the.
Hey, buddy, you know it was city truck, not a state truck.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying, though, Bill. You were smart enough to think of it, and I never did. So,
well, did you ever wear a leprechaun outfit during a St. Patty's Day parade?
You got me on that one too.
Oh yeah, I knew I was going to.
Well, Senator,
possibly the world's tallest leprechaun.
But, yeah, right.
Bill, there's John. There are so many. You know, it's just hard to pick a place to begin. Whether it's the Colts coming to Indianapolis, or keeping the Pacers in town, or just the circle, all the development downtown. You know, look, Detroit has gone bankrupt. I mean, literally bankrupt. And they're having to sell off city assets just to try and stay afloat. And Indianapolis never had that, in large part because there was a consensus led by Bill Hudnut, you know, Dick Lugar before him, but then Bill Hudnut for many, many years, really with a driving force of making sure that we kept that critical mass of economic and civic activity downtown. And so Indianapolis has thrived where many other urban areas have really struggled in recent years. And Circle Center Mall, that's another one. The list goes just on and on. And
well, you and I did the Pan Am. Weren't you governor? You were governor when the Pan Am Games were held.
No, he would have started at
87.
87. You weren't elected until 88.
I was elected in 88, so I was Secretary of State
during
the Pan Am Games. But I got called in because in those days there weren't a lot of Democrats to choose from, so I got nominated for those things.
Well, I also remember, Evan, when we were at your home, the governor's residence, on the United Airlines deal. And then we had news conference in your office. And for me, that was a high point, even though ultimately United Airlines failed or went into bankruptcy and closed the operation out at the airport.
Senator Bayh, we're going to have to let you go now because we have callers backed up like you wouldn't believe.
Thanks for
calling. But I really want to thank you for calling in.
Well, John, my pleasure. And Bill, on behalf of our entire family, my father and Susan and me, we just thank you for your service and for your friendship, and just wish you Godspeed.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
This is a true statesman we have on the phone today.
That's very gracious of you. Thank you, Evan.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you very much for the call.
Be well, Bev. Be well, Bill.
Bye.
Bev, that hearing stuff like that about your husband has to feel pretty good.
Oh, it does. It brings tears to my eyes. It's every time we've gone back. And, you know, most recently in December for the dedication of Hudnut Commons and that marvelous statue, to have people come up and thank him. I mean, not, you know, in addition to the people who donated funds to make the statue a reality and people who organized the events and everything, but people who are working in the restaurants and the doorman at the hotel and just people you run into on the street who come up and feel genuine gratitude and affection for my husband for what he did on behalf of Indianapolis. It means a lot.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with former Indianapolis Mayor Bill Hudnut and his wife, Beverly. As many of you probably know, Mayor Bill was the city's leader for 16 years, from 1976 to 1992, the period when Indianapolis stopped being India no place, or, you know, I think the famous story was that a flight came in and the flight attendant said, "You've just landed in Indianapolis. You can either set your watches back an hour or 25 years, whichever you prefer." If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. If you are just joining us, we are talking with former Indianapolis Mayor Bill Hudnut and his wife, Beverly. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a lot of listeners have done and reach out to us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. One of the comments is a question from Mike. A listener named Mike says, please let Mayor Hudnut know how much the city of Indy thanks him for his service to our city. His vision was very key to our growth.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you, Mike.
We had another comment, a question from a listener who wanted to know, this is Luke via Twitter, and if you want to find us on Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. Luke wants to know what the city of Indianapolis means to you now and how it affected your life personally.
Well, it means a lot to me and to Bev because that's where some of our dearest friends are, plus family. And we always enjoy going back for some of the reasons that Bev just enumerated. And it's just a joy to go back and see how things have progressed since I was mayor. Dick Lugar was talking, or Mitch Daniels was talking about, you know, carrying the torch to the next mayor. And I think over the last 25, 30, 40 years, Indianapolis has been blessed with a string of mayors who I think were much above average. And it's gratifying now to see some of the downtown revitalization and to go to the Super Bowl, which might not have even hardly been dreamed of, although Evan Bayh and I did go down to New Orleans to try to get it one year, and we didn't. But that's neither here nor there. And all the Final Fours and the NCAA rotations and so forth. It's just a joy to go back. And it's part of my heart, part of my life. I think the same would be true of Bev. We've made some new friends here. We're sort of anonymous here. We can walk out on the street. Nobody knows who we are or cares who we are. And it's a different kind of lifestyle. But we enjoy this, but we miss Indianapolis.
Bev, what things do you miss about those years?
There's no doubt that it's a lot of work to be in those positions where you're invited to attend lots of events. I remember that Bill and I used to block off on the schedule one lunch each week and one dinner each week, just the two of us. And that's all we got, just the two of us. It was hard to carve it out, but we did. The rest of the time, we were either out together or just moving around to lots of public events. While it was hard some days to do that day in, day out, every day it would be made very clear to you that from someone you helped with something or someone you made a positive difference in with some activity we supported or some event we attended and conversations we had with people, when you felt like you were really making a difference in other people's lives every day. That meant a lot to both of us.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with former Indianapolis Mayor Bill Hudnut and his wife, Beverly. We're going to take a call now. We're going to listen to caller Mary from Indianapolis. Mary, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi,
Mayor Bill. Mayor Bill, I also very much appreciate everything that you did and the
type of
politician and mayor that you were, along with a number of other ones that I considered to be, you know, good statesmen. So I appreciate it. And I have people who come down to downtown Indianapolis from other countries and East Coast, and they just are blown away with how wonderful it is. But that said, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Politics seems to be a lot different now, and recently the Indiana State Legislature said that Indianapolis could no longer have at-large city councilmen, and Indianapolis was singled out as the only city that would have to give up their at-large city councilmen, and I was just wondering what were your thoughts about that.
Well, the first thing to say is that it's none of my business.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sure that the local Republican establishment had its reasons for eliminating those four positions. And all I can say is that when UNIGOV was originally crafted, it was intended that the four of the at-large candidates would, in addition to the 25 single-member districts, but the four at-large candidates would go up or down with the mayor and give him or her a majority. And it didn't really pan out that way because in this last election, four of them were Democrats. And I guess, the state legislature and the local GOP apparatus felt that it was good to eliminate those. And if I'd been there, I might have disagreed with that, but I wasn't there and I didn't go out publicly on it. It wasn't my place or my business. But let's put it this way. When I was there, the 29 members of the city council were a fine thing. It was too many. I mean, Los Angeles has 13, and we didn't need that many.
Yeah, I don't think there needs to be that many. It's just I always thought the idea of at-large council people kind of gave a good balance or reflection for the city back to the mayor and whoever the mayor was.
And one of the advantages I had was that I was able to include in the four, or we, the GOP team, was able to include women and minorities.
Thanks very much for the call, Mary.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Bill. Thank you again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Bud who wants to know how you would approach turning things around. I'm compressing your email, Bud. How you would turn things around after, you know, the bad news that was RFRA. I mean, how is there a way that you could spin that so that Indiana comes out looking good?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that you have to market the brand, or remarket the brand of Indianapolis, and that takes work from people who are in those nonprofits as well as in the city government, the people in the chamber and so forth. Secondly, I think it's important for whoever's around down there in charge not to continue to take pot shots at people in the state house. They were people of good conscience and character, even though there were severe differences of opinion about the RFRA. But now's the time for healing. And you don't heal by continuing rancor. You heal by being, if you can pardon me the expression, a gentleman or a gentle lady, and treating other people with decency and respect, and not going off on some extreme tangent and a rant. And there has been some rants since RFRA, and I think they're unfortunate. All they do is polarize and make people divide out. And as the good book says, come, let us reason together. That's what you have to do in a city. That's what I tried to do. Or as my father used to say to me, avoid the acute angle. Always in labor negotiations, for example, keep the door open. Never slam the door shut and walk out of the room. And the same goes for police-community relations. And the same goes now, I think, for city-state relations. You just have to rise above it, if you can put it that way, in order to heal the wounds and carry on, because you've got to go forward.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with former Indianapolis Mayor Bill Hudnut and his wife, Beverly. If you'd like to join the conversation, shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what this caller did and give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. We're going with someone who I think you have some acquaintance with. It's your son, Ted.
Oh, is calling. My goodness.
Ted, are you with us?
Hello?
We'll see if we... Hey, Ted, how are you?
Hey, good. You there?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, we're there, and I might say, Ted, that I appreciated very much you and your brother Tim driving all the way from Indianapolis in one day to see me and Bev,
I wanted the listeners to know that everyone knows you as Mayor Bill, but very few of us know you as Dad. and what an incredible father you are. And you have a heart of gold, and your words of wisdom have guided me to where I am now.
Well, bless your heart. Thanks for calling. You're a dear.
So, Ted, while we got you on the line here, tell us something about your father that the public doesn't know.
Be careful.
No, he's very loving, and I know you can't show a huge love when you're in the public eye, so to speak. I know he loved the city and he loved the citizens, but there's just a different kind of love that a lot of us did not see. And my father was always, always, always there by my side, whether it was in good times or bad.
And, well, bless your heart. I remember once chastising you because you sat down in the outfield in a little league game and started picking the clovers.
That's a pretty universal father's experience.
I do remember that. But a very loving man, and great to call my dad.
Thank you. We love you, too.
Thanks, Ted.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thank you very much for the call. Bye. Ted, we also have another caller who worked with you, apparently, in the mayor's office, caller named Juanita. Juanita, are you with us?
I am with him. It was not in the mayor's office.
Oh.
It was before he got to the mayor's office. It was when he was working with the Good Book at Second Presbyterian Church. And he took a risk on hiring a gentleman by the name of Dr. George Boyle to direct his counseling center. And I came on staff with him. And I had some wonderful times working with the session and Bill during those years. And I know that those years then that he served as mayor was based on that good book.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you for calling very much. I just want to add one word, speaking of hiring.
Thank you very much for calling, Juanita.
Yeah, thank you, Juanita. I hired David Letterman's mother.
You're kidding.
No, she was the secretary at the church.
Right.
And her name was Dorothy Letterman, and now she's remarried, but she's famous because of her trips to Norway and everything, and David was her son.
And I'd like to add one thing. Dr. Boyle actually performed our wedding ceremony. It'll be 26 years on May 29th, later this month.
Congratulations.
And we were very, very fond of George.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for the call.
All right, bye-bye.
We've gotten a question from a listener named Ellen who says, fondly remembers seeing Mayor Bill on TV giving updates during the blizzard of 78. Even though I wasn't an Indianapolis resident, I found it comforting to see him in a stocking cap providing reassurance on how the situation was being handled. I have often thought that his background as a clergyman helped in providing everyone with a balm of comfort during a trying time. I would like to know how often during his political career did he rely on his theology to handle policy and situations? And then she closes with best wishes to both of you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the message. And the answer is that I did not believe in wearing my religion on a sleeve when I was out in public life and vice versa. I tried to avoid, when I was invited to preach at different churches, I tried to avoid politics. And when I was asked, for example, at an event in public to say the grace, I usually would say I respectfully decline because I don't want to mix the two. And I felt that my religion, and there are people who disagree with this, but I'm a mainstream Protestant type, and I felt that it was important to emphasize that your faith and your religion are, as it were, leaven in the bread that can't be seen rather than icing on the cake, which can be seen. And I did not believe in trying to legislate morality and make all people believe one way. I like the idea of the big tent, which for a while Dan Quayle was circulating, of let everybody come under this tent. We have respect for each other and their differences. And on the pro-choice, pro-life thing, I think it was important for us as a Republican Party to realize there are people who sincerely differ, and yet they're people of good conscience and character. And that's really the way I approached it, never to parade it, just not to talk about it too much, but to have it inside me.
We're going to try to get to as many callers as possible here. I'm going to ask our callers to be really tight with their questions if possible. We're going to go with a listener named David right now. David, are you with us?
I certainly am, and it's been a long time. Mayor Hudnut, or former Mayor Hudnut there. My name is David, and I was running, and you were gracious enough to sign a petition to save the David Letterman show when it was canceled in the morning.
Oh, I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
So you were. What was your role with the show, David?
Well, absolutely nothing, but I thought I could kind of, before the term became popular, multitask there and promote my acting career along with David's. And when his show got canceled, it just didn't seem fair. So I went around and got signatures. I got almost 3,000 signatures from the House and the Senate. Got them to agree there, matter of fact, here in the state. I got Mayor Daley, Speaker of the House back then. Was it
Bob Daley?
Bob Daley,
Robert Daley.
Robert David, Daley, he actually promoted it. I learned a valuable lesson.
David, if I can, we're getting tight on time, and I'm going to try to get in a couple more comments. Thank you very much for calling.
Well, I do. Well, thank you very much, and best wishes. And give a call there, Bill, and we'll get that key to the mayor, or get to David Letterman.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. We've gotten an email question from a listener, I think, who is familiar to you because you mentioned him already, former Deputy Mayor John Krause.
Oh,
who
good.
Who said that, in keeping with the tradition that an outgoing president writes a letter to the incoming president, wants to know what kind of letter you would write to the next mayor of Indianapolis.
Well, thank you,
John. And
then
I'm also going to ask Bev, what bit of advice would you give to the next significant other?
I very much appreciate John Krause. He came over to see me one day, one weekend here in Indy, here in Washington. And my advice to the next mayor would be, one, to try to repair the damage that was done by RFRA by selling the city. Two, to emphasize the importance of economic development. Three, the importance of education. And four, taking care of those nitty-gritty things that people want in a mayor, namely getting the snow plowed and the trash picked up.
And Bev?
Oh, in a nutshell, I would say it was very important to me to spend time with my husband, and it's very important to carve out time for just the two of you. You know, if it's just lunch and dinner once a week, if that's the best you can get, do that. And I remember Susan Bye and I were taping a PSA together shortly after Bill and I were married. And I remember she gave me a piece of advice that I thought was wise counsel. She said, be sure to take something on, do something for myself. And so I took piano lessons.
That is a wonderful last word. I'd like to thank both of you for being with us. I'd like to thank all of our listeners. And I'm going to assure you, we know you still have emails, Facebook messages, and all of that. We will get them to Mayor Bill and Beverly so that they can see them.
Thanks, Bill and everybody.
Bev, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Pleasure.
Certainly. It's great to see you.
And to all of our listeners, thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.